everyone for coming out and to everyone that put this on. It's a beautiful day out, and especially if you came here on your birthday, thank you very much. So my task is to talk about the legal and political ramifications of the G20 moving forward in Toronto. No problem. So since late June, we have seen the marked, and some would say natural, inclination to separate the political from the legal. And that is not to criticize anything that's been said today, because everything was coordinated of who would say what. But I just want to caution against that inclination. Yes, Toronto has just seen the largest mass arrest that this country has ever seen. It's outrageous, it's appalling, it's incredibly unjust. But while groups like the Canadian Civil Liberties Association and aspects of the mainstream media defend our rights to protest and condemn the abuses of process, they erase the politics that we came together for. They erase the reasons that we protested. And they erase the reasons that the tactics that were taken at the G20 were taken. The arrests were made not necessarily because of what happened on the streets, but also because of the public confrontation to capitalism and imperialism that we collectively made. And this is evidenced by the conspiracy charges against a number of the people that were organizing against the G20. So just so people know, people were charged with conspiracy to commit mischief, to obstruct police, and assault police. And what conspiracy is, and I'll just explain it through this analogy. It's an analogy. I'm speaking hypothetically. This is not my intention, nor would it ever be my intention, but please don't say yes to any of these things. So let's say I say to you, why don't we get a bunch of helium balloons and attach them to Stephen Harper? And so he floats away, and he takes all of his bullshit oppressive policies with him, and we don't have to ever see him again. You say yes, conspiracy. Okay, that's impossible. Doesn't matter, still conspiracy. Now, if you say, actually, I think that's a bit of a bad idea, and I say, okay, fair enough, can I borrow your kite string for this? And you say yes, you are guilty of the conspiracy. Okay, and so then at trial for kidnapping, assault, and whatever else they try us with, then the evidence, because it's about our conversation and our intentions and nothing ever actually happened, that the rules of evidence are relaxed. So hearsay is admissible, and it's a lot easier to obtain a conviction. And then on sentencing, if we're convicted of conspiring to attach Stephen Harper to helium balloons, we would face the same sentencing that we would face had we otherwise actually attached Stephen Harper to a bunch of helium balloons. Yay! So that's how conspiracy law works, and that's the way that it's being applied against our organizers. And these charges, and all G20 charges, are about quelling dissent, as has already been said. Resistance and dissent have been criminalized in order to accomplish that goal. The conspiracy charges make this clear, and so do the bail conditions that people have gotten. Hassan spoke about that at length, the attempts to stop organizing from happening. These charges are about attacking leadership, and as are the bail conditions, which are typical conditions, just to be clear, of people who are charged with murder, attempted murder, kidnapping, very brutal, very violent assaults. Okay? So these are the kind of conditions that people are getting. It's not the first time that we've seen conditions like that in Toronto for protesters, but it's incredibly rare, and it's obviously incredibly outrageous. Sorry. After June 15th, we did see three of our members of our leadership be given non-association with the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. And so while we successfully fought that, we spent a summer without those three people being able to communicate with anyone in the organization. And that's why people get those conditions, as a punitive measure, as a means of stopping people from being able to do organizing in the interim, while people garner the resources to be able to fight those conditions in the court as well as politically. And following the eviction of Finance Minister Jim Flaherty's office in Whitby of 2001, we saw two of the 12 people arrested denied bail initially, and then one of those people and myself given house arrest, strict house arrest conditions as well. And so again, when and if we look between 2000, 2001, and now, there are a couple very important similarities as to why these conditions are being used then and now, and not in between. Why? Growth of a movement sparked resistance. We're capturing people's imagination. At the same time, the people are very angry. Mike Harris, Stephen Harper, they really piss people off. And it's because they really attack people very hard. So as resistance grows, the state feels threatened and feels the necessity to respond, and respond with increasingly violent and repressive and regressive tactics. And these bails, they don't just, and charges, they don't just target leadership and try and restrict things. They also very brilliantly and effectively suck resources out of our communities. So we've seen maybe $140, $150 in cash go from our communities to the state for cash bails. And that's not counting the millions of dollars that are promised if people breach their conditions. On top of that, we now have to raise $250,000 for legal fees. So again, the state's tools suck these resources out. They suck our energy and our money away from us to try and make our ability to organize as difficult as possible, as well as to try and distract us from organizing and focus solely on these legal charges. And that's why it's so important that we not let that win. It's very important that all of us give whatever we can to legal defense. While I'm saying that this is a trap, it's a trap that we have to comply with at this point. We have to support, like Hassan said, the people that have been arrested. We have to support them personally and politically and financially. However, we also need to understand that this is a tactic. And we need to work to manipulate this tactic to the best advantage that we can. And in doing that, we need to ensure that the reason that we came together in the first place and the reason that we came to fight the G20 is never lost. So why did we come to fight the G20? Well, for First Nations First Nations sovereignty, have it be respected, to have rates be raised, to stop the attack on migrants and to get status for all, to ensure that our communities are not being cleansed, and to fight for justice, economic, social justice for everyone. And I've completely lost my speech entirely, so I'm just gonna kind of rant at you for five more minutes. And in addition to that, if we begin to focus solely on the legal aspect of what's happened over the G20, like really the state wants us to do, and like mainstream organizations oftentimes want us to do, we also begin to lose the parallels between those people that we have inside and the other people inside, who may be people that we know or care about as well. And we lose the parallels between the fact that there are communities in this city, neighborhoods in this city, that endure the police tactics that we saw on the G20, perhaps on a smaller scale, on a daily basis. And there are countries that are affected by the G20 policies that endure the tactics that we saw in this city, perhaps on a larger scale, on a daily basis. And we can never forget those things. We can't allow the legal aspect of what's going on, which is outrageous, to become disconnected. And if we do that, and if we lose our demands, then we've lost. And we've given this to the state. And we've actually made it easier for the state to implement austerity measures. And what do those austerity measures mean? Well, it means a cut to the special diet. It means that already it's been announced that the special diet's gonna be cut. 162,000 people in this province depend on this money for food. And these are folks on social assistance, who, because of this money, have been able to be healthier, have higher quality of life, and be more likely to retain their housing. In 2002, $6 million was being spent on the special diet. OCAP began campaigning for people to be able to get access to this money, and this year, $200 million is being spent on the special diet. And that's one of the most significant victories that the left has seen in many years. And we're about to lose it. And if we lose the special diet, not only are we going to see increasing amounts of evictions and desperation in our communities, but we are also going to lose a huge victory in the name of austerity. And so it's so important that if you're against the G20, you understand that you're for the special diet. If you're against the G20, you understand that you're against the cuts that are going to be coming down in First Nations communities, in racialized communities, in poor communities across the city and across the world. And that's just one example of one of the cuts. But at the same time that we're promised that there's going to be so many cuts coming down the line, and we've been seeing them already, at the same time, the province is spending $1.43 billion on the Pan Am Games here in 2015. And to put that in perspective, the 2011 Pan Am Games, they're planning on spending $230 million. So Toronto, for some reason, really has to go all out when we have a lot of people come here. And this is a tremendous expense that, while we're seeing huge cuts to poor people and to marginalized communities, we're seeing these massive expenditures going into the Pan Am Games. Well, how does that make sense? How is it that under austerity that we can be spending this much money on the Pan Am Games? Well, it's really simple. The Pan Am Games acts as a funnel for public resources to go into and private profits to come out of. And just look at the Vancouver Olympics as one example of that. So we will lose collectively $2 billion. But privately, rich people will gain remarkably from that loss to us. The same as the bailout of the banks. Around $270 billion in this country went to bail out the banks. The banks got rewarded dramatically for their part in the economic crisis, yet we are paying for it. So austerity is this tricky thing where it's not actually austerity. What the G20 stands for is a concentration of wealth and power in the hands of the few, the rich, and the elite, at the expense of everyone else. That's why they came to Toronto. We cannot lose that. And indeed, the best way for us to support anyone that was arrested at the G20 is to never forget why they went, and to act in a spirit of solidarity, bring that forward continuously as we go out and demand that those charges be dropped. Say one more quick thing about that repression. It's not going to stop as we continue to build. As we see in this room, it being August, pre-G20, I don't know if anyone of us would call a meeting in August and expected this many people to come. And as we see people becoming increasingly angry and things begin to build, we're going to see these tactics continue. And that's why OCAP saw 11 people arrested for simply standing in the Liberal Party headquarters a few weeks ago. 9 of those people have charges. 2 of those people do not, because of the gross ableism that for once acted in the favor of one of our members. And so in supporting those people who went to that office to defend the special diet, we will bring forward the demand to have their charges dropped, but also to have the special diet defended on the 30th, which is their first court date, at 9 a.m. at the Attorney General's office. So please come. And then just lastly, in the face of this repression, we'll work to organize and to keep fighting. During the G20 summit, we saw rage in the city's streets. People's anger is righteous and it is legitimate. We need to find creative and powerful ways to use those people's rage and to build their rage, and to create a resistance movement that will effectively challenge capitalism, colonialism, and oppression. And in OCAP, we have been saying that this these coming years have to be marked by our resistance, not by their austerity, and we need to collectively make sure that we're the ones to write the history of the next few years. Thank you. Yeah.